Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Diana Deeney. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Diana. I'm looking forward to some interesting topics today.
Yes, risky topics.
You know, leading up to this, we went back and forth a few times, and one of them that really struck a chord with me is hazard analysis and FMEA, which are often thought of as two different topics, but how they relate to each other is just fascinating to me. What do you think?
I think that's a great thing to get clarity on. I have a medical device background, and I've done both, and they've all filtered down through and back up again. It is something interesting to manage and can help you create safer products.
Yeah, exactly. And so we can begin with the medical device examples, and then the topic carries over into everything. But just on medical devices, I have seen many companies that do both. In other words, they'll do an FMEA, but they'll be very careful about the highest severity because they want to run through that through the safety people, and then they'll end up with a hazard analysis to support it. And oftentimes, they're completely separate activities, even though they have similar failure modes and similar effects and that type of thing. So there is a lot of efficiency and even effectiveness that benefited from consideration about how they interact with each other.
Yeah, and I especially find that important with, risk management plans, planning at the beginning of the project, how you're going to handle these kind of things, and what you're planning to do and how they're going to relate. That can help a lot. And I guess there are some, you're bringing up some special considerations with when you're doing both, that if you structure them a little bit, I wouldn't say incorrectly, but maybe how you structure them could make your life a whole lot more difficult instead of actually helping you.
Yeah, it can. There's so many similarities. Very often the columns can be organized to be this essentially the same where they are the same, and then the differences show up. Like, for instance, one of the primary differences is how you begin. Like an FMEA begins with an item identification, and then it starts with describing the functions. And then you build from the functions into the failure modes, and on you go. Whereas the hazard analysis often begins, of course, it has an item, but it begins with the hazards, listing out the hazards. And so there's an interesting difference between them. And I wouldn't want to get that lost. Like when I do hazard analysis, I often want to at least consider what the functions are to make sure we haven't missed any important hazards. But it does begin with the listing of hazards, whereas FME usually begins with the listing of the functions.
Yeah, the hazard analysis is supposed to be high-level, top-down, system-level view. I guess beyond system, because you can have a system FMEA, but the hazard analysis is more of the whole system, as in where it sits in the environment, who's using it, what it interfaces with, and can really start with some of those high-level hazards, like electrical hazards, physical hazards, and all those kind of topics at the top.
Yes, it can. So I think the discussion about the intersection between the two, if we stayed at the same level in the system hierarchy, like system, for example. So if you had a crazy example would be a bicycle. And if you're doing a hazard analysis, well, what are the hazards? Well, obviously a loss of braking on a bicycle would be a type of hazard. And at a system level on a bicycle, you could be doing a loss of braking would be if you have a function to break properly within certain requirements, then loss of breaking would be the manner in which it doesn't do that. So you have similarities between the two if you are at the same level of the system hierarchy. Like you say, the hazard is typically at the higher level. Oftentimes, FMEA is as well. So now what's interesting to me is one of the differences is the initiating mechanism. So you got a hazard like loss of braking in a bicycle. If you have a brake pad that loses its integrity in some way, mm-hmm. that could be an initiating mechanism. And there's lots of other initiating mechanisms. And we see some similarity on that in the failure mechanism in an FMEA. And further down the row or column, so to speak, when you get to failure mechanism, whereas in hazard analysis, it's pretty quickly there to understand that the mechanism that initiates the hazard. Another difference is the although the hazard can be a failure mode, it could also be an effect. It's basically a hazard. And so it has to be understood from the definition of hazard, which is not the same as failure mode. And so that's that therein lies one of the differences. We're basically going to list the hazards in a hazard analysis. And another one, of course, in FMEA, you go from failure mode to effect, and you don't have that differentiation in the hazard analysis. So it's just interesting when you line them up next to each other. And one of the other big ones that jumps out, Nan, is which is really important, is you can, not everybody does this, but you can move into risk management from your hazard analysis and get not just the severity of the harm, but you can get the probability of the hazardous situation,
mm-hmm.
the probability of the hazardous situation leading to harm, and then the combination of the two, which is the probability of occurrence of harm, which then plays right into the risk management, where you can determine high, medium, low risk based on the probability of the occurrence of harm. So that's an interesting, and there's not one type of hazard analysis. There's many different standards. So I just thought I'd mention that it opens itself up to this added value where you get the probability of the occurrence of harm, whereas in FMEA, you never get that. Mm. You get the severity, which is a qualitative assessment of potential harm without any statement of the likelihood of that harm.
Now, that probability at the hazard analysis level, I always looked at that as a conditional probability calculation, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's something that can be really useful to help teams prioritize their activities and where they focus on the design. It can also help them prioritize what FMEAs they should actually be doing or where FMEAs could be valuable for them to be able to define controls to, I don't know, reduce that occurrence.
Yeah, for sure. The probability of occurrence of harm is an interesting intersection. When you look at from an FMEA standpoint, you have the severity of the effect, which is a qualitative. So it could be very severe. It could be not quite as severe, you know, moderately severe, things like that. And then there's all kinds of standards that give you qualitative criteria for that. Like MIL standard 1629 on the military side has very specific criteria, whereas in automotive, it's a little more general. Mm-hmm. But it's still qualitative. And then separately from that in FMEA, you get a likelihood of occurrence of the failure mode and associated cause,
right,
which is not the likelihood of occurrence of the effect. Hazard analysis doesn't get into that, doesn't really get into a cause. It can, you can add a cause column, but most people don't. But it gets into the likelihood of occurrence of the harm, which is the effect. So it's a really interesting differences, and they work really well together. Like I've worked with many medical device companies that they begin with an FMEA, then they'll pass over and someone will start a hazard analysis, but then they'll pass the hazards back to the FMEA to make sure they didn't miss something. It's like becomes an input, or you can even start with the hazard analysis and then the FMEA can benefit to make sure you don't miss any important hazards in the FMEA. So they can work together. And in some companies, they want the hazard analysis to build where the FMEA says a severity is very high. They want to be sure that the HA does a thorough job of ensuring that doesn't happen. And so there's a lot of opportunity for companies to have these interact back and forth. What's been your experience with that? Do you see them both being done, or do you see one or the other?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to say my experience with that is starting with the hazard analysis. Mm-hmm. And there's different categories of hazards. Like I mentioned, electrical hazards, mechanical hazards, chemical. So they're high level hazards, but they're considering the procedure, the environment, who's using it, and what the basic idea of the product is. And there is the hazard, the effect of that. But then I've commonly used a cause. But the cause is very high level because we're supposed to be doing this at a high level, top down. And plus at the point when you're really doing it or you should do it is kind of early because you want it to be able to drive decisions and trade-off decisions and how much you need to test. So the causes are listed in the hazard analysis, but they might be as high level as this is a design failure. This is a failure because we didn't control manufacturing good enough or well enough. Or this could be the way our user's interacting with our device isn't appropriate, or there is a use error or a mistake. And based on the results of that, that kind of drives what FMEAs we decide to do.
Interesting. So you basically start with the HA and then explore it further. When you do your HA, do you have a action column, like actions recommended and taken like in an FMEA, or is that the HA identifies where the problems are and what the risk is, and then the FMEA takes over to reduce risk?
Yeah, there is an action items column. There are some things at the high system level. Those are the things that we try to identify in the hazard analysis. If there's some sort of communication or training, or if there is a scenario where we're looking at a particular hazard, but we know that the use environment is, let's say it's going to be an operating suite, that environment is really controlled. And this is where this product is going to be used. So sometimes we take that into consideration too, that yes, this is a potential hazard, but this product and the procedure that we're doing is going to be in this highly controlled environment that's defined by the hospital and other standards for medical care. And so we would list that as a potential control for that, or as an action item to, you know, how do we ensure that our product is only used in that scenario, or do we need to do research to make sure that that control is adequate? That's how we kind of use the hazard analysis to drive some research and decision-making.
Right, right. How do you make sure, and I'll share my ideas on this too, how do you make sure you haven't missed any important hazards?
Well, it's a team activity. It's also compared with other hazard analyses of similar products. Not that you copy-paste, right? But if you have the knowledge base and the information at your disposal, you know, you should try to use it. And it's usually starting with a high-level hazardous situations that are common for whatever is being developed. So I guess that there's a lot of experience. This isn't, you know, a brand new product idea that's never been tested before in the field. You know, it's an iteration of something that's already existed. So I guess that's where I'm coming from, is that for things that are already existing, there's a lot of experience data that can be used to just check your hazard analysis to see if it's complete.
Well, very, very good. So in my case, I will try both. No matter what I'm doing, whether it's a new product or a revised product, if it's a revision, of course there will be data, and you can have a list of hazards that have already happened in the field or in operation, and then usually there's some kind of changes, so there might be some additional potential ones. And then I will also, in addition to whatever background research, I'll consider that input to the analysis. I'll also use yellow stickies. So I start every hazard analysis or FMEA with a yellow sticky pad to each of the team members. And I said, before we do any entries into the worksheet or the database, I just say, write down things you're concerned about for this particular product, mm-hmm. things that keep you up at night, things you want to be sure don't happen, things you're worried about. And then put one per yellow sticky and just put them up on the wall. And it'll be a furious amount of work for about a half an hour to an hour as everybody's writing everything down that they're concerned about. And we get it up on the wall. And then between that and the research that we've done, we pretty much have our list of inputs. And then we'll begin analyzing, and some of them will go in the analysis. Some of the team might end up saying, that's ridiculous. You know, we're not going to have that particular one. But I always use the rule, even if one person brings it up, we're going to deliberate about it.
Right.
Make sure we don't miss something. And so that's my technique. I imagine other people have techniques that they use to make sure nothing is being missed.
That's a really great technique. I like it a lot. I use it for some of my other analyses too. And I call it brainwriting, where mm-hmm. you're giving people just a chance to think about their own experiences and where they're coming at this problem with. And they're writing down their ideas there's no judgment, you know, there's no competition. It removes a lot of the barriers that typical brainstorming can give. And when you transfer that post-it note to the wall, something seems to happen where now it's no longer my idea, it's our idea. So yeah. It seems to shift ownership of everyone's ideas from this is my idea to this is our idea. So it allows for better deliberation. And you know, people may find they're not necessarily comparing their ideas against other people's, but instead they're just looking at the whole of it. So yes, I think brainwriting and that kind of way to do it is a great way to start the team on a hazard analysis. And it gets them to exercise on the problem, to get them thinking about what could be next or what they should be thinking about.
Right, right. And the other thing that it helps, and I use this when I'm facilitating any team, is people will bring things up out of sequence. They'll action to mitigate the hazard risk, you know, even though they haven't finished documenting the hazard, they'll do things out of sequence. And I really like to accept that input and not, because I've been in teams where they say, okay, bring that, we'll get to that later. Just hold that thought.
Yeah.
And then the thought goes away and you never get back to it. So I do like, and the yellow sticky can be useful in that as well. So you keep the flow going in the right sequence, but you don't interrupt people's creative thoughts.
You know, and you can do this even virtually. And I think these stickies are important because they're temporary and movable. Whereas if you just try to list it out, then you have to copy it somewhere else. Even virtually, in virtual whiteboards, if you use sticky notes, There's more freedom to move things around, add things, group things together. It's sort of like a visual permission to change things to how you need it to be.
Yes, and let me explore one more thing with you. I sort of transitioned a little bit to risk management. And because the hazard analysis particularly can be hugely valuable, not just to mitigate hazards, but to identify and quantify risk. So I want to clarify something so that listeners can understand better and even ask questions about it of us. But I introduced two probability numbers. One is the probability of the hazardous situation. So you have a loss of braking in the bicycle. What's the likelihood of that on, 0 to 100%? And so that's one probability. But the loss of braking doesn't necessarily lead to a harmful event. Mm-hmm. Like you can lose braking on a straightaway and you just coast to a stop. But if you lose braking in certain circumstances in a bicycle, you're likely to get hurt. So the second probability is if that hazardous situation occurs, what's the likelihood of harm? And so that's going to be its own probability. And when you get those things together and multiply them together, call them P1, P2, you get the probability of the harm. And that is an interesting metric or assessment or rating, because from that you can evaluate risk, whether it's high, medium, low, or however you want to do it. Then you can make changes. Like in the example of a brake pad, you might change the formulation, some new synthetic formulation, and that could change the likelihood of, it won't change the likelihood of, let's see, I have to actually think about this, the loss of braking. So it might change that one. Yes, it would. Mm-hmm. And then if you do lose braking, then it probably wouldn't change the likelihood of harm if you lose the braking, because you've already lost the braking. So there, one of them is going to change, and it's going to change the final probability. And so that's one of the ways you can, if people want to quantify the risk reduction in a different way based on hazard analysis moving into risk management, whereas FMEA would say, okay, we're first going to try to reduce the severity, and that could be certain things you do to mitigate the actual severity. And like in my e-bike, there's a software, there's a sensor that senses when the brake lever is not working properly. It's not actually changing the caliper.
Oh, yeah.
And it alerts me right away to that on the display. And that can actually mitigate severity, and it depending on how you describe the failure mode. But you want to do that first. But then a lot of the FME is reducing the likelihood of occurrence of the cause. And so both of those have value. And that's really what I wanted to get across, is the hazard analysis has value by itself. The FMEA has value by itself, and they can interact with each other so that you don't have to like start over. For example, if you start with the hazard analysis, a lot of that is input to the FMEA and vice versa. So I want to kind of throw that out there as well. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. And even with, you got me thinking, there's software on your e-bike that's letting you know when the braking is not acting appropriately. So now you also have a new user interface there, where are you understanding the message, and what are you going to do to mitigate the control? So now from the hazard analysis, you've identified another, another thread to pull on when you're thinking about risk. And
well, if hazard is a source of danger or some potential condition that can result in an accident, I mean, there's a lot of definitions of it, but yeah, that interface could be the input to that identification of a hazard. So the we've got listeners now. We've introduced this topic. There's so much to say on this. I'm sure we haven't covered it thoroughly. I'd be very interested if you're a listener and you have any thoughts about FME and hazard analysis, either by themselves or together. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And listeners, you can give your feedback on this episode and others. It's ascendoreliability.go/SOR. And you can visit that website and provide us feedback. And Carl and I are also available as part of the Ascendo Reliability Network and on LinkedIn. You can find us there.
Fantastic. Well, it's a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.